Many of us are still digging out or assessing damage from Sandy. So we have asked Lawrence Ubell of Accurate Building Inspectors, one of our gurus of how to, back today to share some tips on clearing debris and other safety concerns as the cleanup continues. And we will be taking your calls. The number is 646-829-3980. That's 646-829-3980. That's the number we have to use right now because of the problems that we are experiencing down here in downtown Manhattan. You can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org as well. Larry, welcome back to our show.
Glad to be back. I'm actually back in the city now, so I got to see firsthand some of the devastation that's been going on both in Staten Island where I live and in Brooklyn where my parents live. So we've been dealing with things. I got a pump for them that I picked up when I drove down from Boston and Connecticut, so we're pumping out their basement. They got close to about 8 to 9 feet of water in their basement. So it's been pretty trying times, and they actually had to relocate to a hotel for overnight because of lack of services. So we're getting by. So,
well, what was the situation up in Boston? Did the storm affect that area as well, or is it really just New Jersey and New York that got hit hardest?
It seemed New York and New Jersey. I was actually, in our brilliance, took a cruise that was supposed to go to Bermuda, and we ended up, like I said, in the tropical city of Boston. But there was really no hurricane there to speak of in Boston Harbor. It was rainy, it was overcast, but nothing really of any kind of real devastation at all. I know that parts of Massachusetts did get hit, probably more of the parts like Cape Cod, but I don't really have any real information on that. But where I was, it seemed pretty good. And then on the drive down from Boston to New York was pretty clear also. So there was no real problems there either, and that was a good thing.
Well, it's day four, and many people in this area are still without power. What are the most important things that they could do to make their lives easier?
Well, the biggest thing is that I know a lot of people have been using candles to light their homes, and unfortunately candles don't last very long.
They can feel very romantic.
It's very romantic, but once the candle goes out, it becomes a lot less romantic. To make those candles last longer, if you happen to have any kind of oil, like peanut oil, vegetable oil, just put the candle in a glass or a bowl and fill it up with the oil, and then just light the candle. Instead of burning up the wax, it'll start burning the oil. So that can make it last. Even a birthday candle will last quite a bit longer. It could last for days, actually. So that's a good tip to do.
What about leaving it going all night? The mayor warned us not to do that.
No, you shouldn't have it on all night. You should only have it on when you actually need light. Mm. If you're sleeping, turn them off because you are the early warning system for any kind of fire or anything like that. So, no, I totally agree with the mayor. The mayor is right on target. But if you need a candle while you're awake and you want to read or you just have light so you don't feel like you're just sitting in a closet, I definitely agree that you should have candles lit. But once it's Once you're done with that, blow it out and go to sleep.
No.
And that way you can also save your flashlight batteries for when you really need to move around, because don't walk around with a candle or a candle definitely filled with oil, because that could be very hazardous.
But go ahead.
No, that's what I was going to say.
If you have electricity and you can use a computer, you can post a question on our show page at WNYC.org. If you have phone service, some people have had problems along those lines, although I understand it's a lot better today for many. The number here is 646-829-3980. And let's go to one of those callers. Jane, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to ask, I'm in the dark zone of the East Village, okay? No power. But I have a gas stove. And it is electronic spark ignition. Now, this is working fine with matches on the cooktop, but I'd like to use the oven today. And I've got the owner's manual, and it looks like I can do it safely, but I just thought I'd like to check with an expert.
Yes, you can. You can do it safely. The first thing you do is I would suggest using either long matches or a long lighter to do this, but you can just light the lighter first and then turn the gas on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is that if the owner's manual says you can do it safely, just make sure you follow the instructions. I'm a little hesitant about that, only in the sense that if it has a thermal couplink in it, it may not start up, because a thermal couplink, what that does is it's a device on all gas devices that stops the gas from flowing in the event there's no ignition. So I'm not sure how that thermocoupling would be clicked into place. So
okay.
I'm sure the instructions, as far as safety, once it's lit, there's no safety issue. It's
uh-huh.
getting it lit where the safety issue is, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
So if that
thermo thing doesn't work, is it dangerous?
If the thermal coupling is not working, then it is dangerous, in the sense that if the flame was to get blown out, then gas could enter into the space.
Seeing it could be lit and that could fail or not.
It could
be
fail, because let's say right now, because I'm not sure what the integrity of the gas system is, but if there's an air pocket in the gas system, then the flame would go out temporarily and then come back on, but there would be no flame there to keep it lit.
Well, would that be any different for anyone else who has a gas stove, whether they're in an affected area or not?
It would be the same regardless if there is an air pocket in the gas line, whether you're in an affected area or not. But the thing is, with the thermocoupling working, once the thermocoupling turns off, it won't allow the gas to flow anymore. So that's what the concern is. But if I know I'm going to defer to the owner's manual, and if they say it could be done, just follow the instructions very closely.
Okay.
Thank you. And we go now to Max. Hi, Max. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
So I'm living in Manhattan on 30th Street and 11th Avenue.
Yeah.
And the lights went off here, and already for 4 straight days, we're without water, we're without electricity. The corridors are black. The staircase was black 2 days ago. Now the building put up lights there, and we have 3 generators, and they're working.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty at first when the storm was blowing.
Mm-hmm.
We forgot to tape our windows with X's in order, if mm-hmm. any debris hit us and knocked our window out. We wanted to be safe, so while the storm was going on, we were putting X's, and it was pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, we wake up, and the storm's still going, but there's no lights, and we don't understand why is there no lights. And then we hear on the radio from you
mm-hmm.
that electric station got blown up or something, and
yep.
so we understood that. And we were very low on water.
But let me ask you a question. What's the question?
The question is, so the people who got the power knocked out.
Yes.
What are the days like? How many days are left until we have electricity?
I'm not sure, Larry. You can't answer that, Larry. We don't know.
Well, from what I've heard from Con Ed and what the reporter just reported on the station was that they're hoping that they're going to have it on by Saturday, which is their schedule.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for. I thought that the caller was going to ask about water and flushing toilets, because that has become a big issue as well. We take flushing a toilet for granted until something like this happens. And if you have bottled water, you probably would want to keep that for drinking.
You would, but what you could do is, if there, as far as flushing the toilet is concerned, what you can do is, if there are running fire hydrants on the street, or if there, because some people are in high-rise buildings, what you could do, if you have the availability to do this, get a big pot of water, or get some large containers, gallon containers, and then just, if you have a tank toilet, you can fill up the tank manually and then flush the toilet. You take the top off the tank and fill it up to maybe about halfway in the tank, and then flush it that way, and that will flush the debris down the toilet. If you happen to have a flush valve, there's really not a lot you can do right now. And those, or flushometers, which some people call it, if you have one of those, there's not much to do. But then you can also just throw water directly into the toilet bowl, and that will make some of the debris go down.
Okay, let's take another call. This one is from Roxanne. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. What about you?
Thank you for keeping us so informed. We have no cable here, so thanks to NPR for keeping us connected.
You're in Rutherford.
We're in Rutherford, but actually my question is about Lavalette, New Jersey. My husband is trying to access our home right now by boat, and we've been told by a neighbor that the water is already swelling the cabinet. So if we are not allowed to get into the home for several days or weeks, what can we do? Is there anything that we can do at this point?
Not really, because if the cabinets are swelling up, it means that either the plywood or the particle board is absorbing the water. Especially if it's particle board, it's really particle board is very much like a sponge in that respect, and will start absorbing the water. I think at this point, this is going to have to be somewhat of a total loss, and the cabinets are going to have to be replaced. If hopefully we can get the water out of that space and get it start drying out, maybe it might start to come together, but chances are it's probably going to, the laminate or whatever the surface is going to start delaminating from the particle board or from the plywood, and it's probably going to be a complete loss, and they're going to have to be replaced. Also, I'm always concerned, as everybody else is, about fungal and mold growth within the plywood or the particle board of the cabinets. And once that starts happening, which, you know, at this point, if the water's not receding quick enough, it's going to start to grow, especially if you can't get back to this house.
So what happens after the water recedes? Do you have to wait until everything has dried before you can actually begin doing anything?
Yes, you do have to wait for, but to speed up that process, two things, moving air around, but also dehumidification. I know you hear me and my father always speaking about dehumidification and dehumidifiers, but this would be a great time to buy several dehumidifiers and start bringing the humidity level down in the house and getting that water out of the air and down the drain or outside the building. And once you get the place, you know, pretty much cleaned up, now we got to start dehumidifying, and some of those cabinets may come back. They may, if you can dry them out quick enough, they may start to be salvaged or usable again.
Now, so, listeners like Roxanne are homeowners, but many of our listeners are renters. Are renters more limited in the types of things they can do?
Not as far as they're limited in the sense of doing actual repairs, but as far as drying out, cleaning out, and even buying a dehumidifier to dehumidify their space, they can certainly go ahead and do that. They can start getting the place healthy again, so we don't have this mold or fungal growth going on in the building products of the building, such as the drywall, such as the cabinets, and your carpeting and so on. Obviously, at this point, if your carpeting is wet, you're pretty much pulling it out and throwing it away. Because if it is wet, it most likely, unless water came in through the roof. But if water came in from below, that water's got a ton of foreign matter in it, debris, even some sewage. So you're probably going to want to get rid of all of that.
Let's put Valerie from Long Island on the air. Hi, Valerie.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm here in Seacliff, and no power, no heat. And I'm just wondering, I do have a gas stove, which I managed to, you know, with matches. Is there any suggestion, I'm here also with my two elderly parents, how to keep the house or get the house warm? You know, it's getting cold, especially at night. You know, I don't have a fireplace. Are there any suggestions that we might not have known?
To keep the house warm, and you don't have electricity, correct?
Correct. Nothing.
Nothing. That's a difficult
one. Put on a sweater.
Difficult one, because using kerosene heaters inside is extremely dangerous. At this point, I really am at a loss for what you can actually do to get the heat up in the space. The only suggestion I really do have, and this is also a problem because I was just at Home Depot, and they have a line of people outside waiting for generators to come off of a truck. So the only suggestion I have is that if you can get access to a generator and some space heaters, that's your best shot at getting heat, because, again, I'm not a big fan of using the propane heaters or kerosene heaters inside a building because of the carbon monoxide element to it all.
Okay, so, Valerie?
Sorry.
Yeah, but thanks so much.
But
no,
how much does the generator cost?
Well, I saw when I was there, hopefully there's no gouging going on. And obviously, as we heard in the earlier show, that if you do see gouging, definitely call the public advocate's office. But it looks like you could probably pick up, I saw one in Home Depot for $500. So probably between $500 and $1,000 is what you're looking for a generator. Again, with generators, a couple of things. When you get out of the box, most of them are traditional four-cycle motors, so you have to put oil in them before you start it up. That's really important. And by all means, you do not run the generator inside the house. It has to be vented just like a car or any other kind of internal combustion engine, because you're running inside the house, you can die from carbon monoxide poisoning. So now the other thing is because we're in the situation we are, where there's a limited amount of generators in the area, make sure you lock your generator to something that's not movable, so no one steals your generator in the middle of the night.
Just one more thing, Larry.
Yes.
How should people prepare their homes for when the power and water return?
Well, the most important thing as far as when the water returns, make sure that all your faucets are off.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes people don't remember which way on and off is.
And the stove as well.
A stove as well, and the same thing with lights. Make sure as many lights in the house are off. Fortunately, we're not in a situation like we are in the summer when you have a summer blackout and everyone's air conditioner is still on and then everything blows. Right now, we're pretty limited in what we have on, so the amount of lights shouldn't cause a major problem, but make sure that all the lights are off. And leave at least one on so you can tell when the electricity does come back on. But really, at this point, again, because it's a low consumption period of time, I don't see that as a major problem.
Larry, thank you so much for being with us again. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
No problem. Everyone be safe. But also, everyone remember to take pictures of your losses. The insurance companies will need those. So
that's good advice.
Okay, so take care and everyone be safe.